Michael Cusack is a former amateur road racing cyclist. He won a number of domestic races in Ireland, and he raced in events such as the Tour of Ireland and the Shea Elliott Memorial, and he also competed abroad. Michael started out with the Dublin Wheelers and later joined the Tarleton team. He also raced for the Cork team at the 1975 Tour of Ireland. Michael's latest book is called Behind the Yellow Jersey, Racing in the Shadows of Kelly and Roach, and the book tells the story of Michael's experiences in elite amateur cycling and, as the title suggests, the days when he raced alongside two of Ireland's best ever riders, Sean Kelly and Stephen Roach. Delighted to say that he joined us on the line now to talk about his recent publication. Welcome along, Michael. It's great to speak to you, and thank you for taking the time out to discuss your book and your experiences with us here on CRY 104 FM.
Thanks so much, Jordan.
When did you realise that cycling was going to become such an important part of your life, would you say?
Well, I was really inspired by my brother, who's 7 years older than me, and he was an Irish international in the late 60s. And I used to see him coming in and out of the house wearing what I called at the time horseshoes, because the steel plates on the cycling shoes used to make this rattling noise on the floor. And sometimes the other lads would come around and they'd be chatting about the cycling. And I had my first five-gear bike around that time. And one evening I was riding back from probably from school, and a racing cyclist went by me, and I thought, you know, I'll just try and hang on to him. And so we were racing along the Grand Canal in Dublin, and I found that I was able to keep up with him. I was sitting on his back wheel, so to speak, which seemed to annoy him quite a lot, being a young lad, young skinny lad. But anyway, I kind of got the bug from that, I think, and started doing my own solo rides around Wicklow, going out at the weekends. I was big into bird watching at the time, so that was an excuse to get out on the bike for a few hours.
I see.
And from there, I joined the Dublin Wheelers touring group. So that's how I sort of really started my cycling career.
Interesting, and certainly took off from there. And now your latest book, which I completed this week, it's a fantastic read. I really enjoyed it. And when or how did the idea for the book come about, Michael, and how long did it take to actually put it all together?
Well, I actually, after I finished my cycling career, I got involved in business. I went into a copywriting career for an Irish advertising agency, and then I spent many years away in Saudi Arabia, Austria, and mostly in America. So I didn't really think too much about my cycling career and really the opportunities that I was so lucky to have back in the 70s to be riding in Ireland at a time when two of the best cyclists in the world were emerging. Mm-hmm. And so it was only when I started winding down my career in corporate America that I thought, you know, why not write a book? Because at the time I was racing back in the late 70s, I had written so many notes about every single ride that I did, even the training rides. I would make 15 notes about what I ate, what I felt like, you know, what gears I used, what the terrain was like, the weather, and so on. And I thought, you know, being that I have all of this information, why not put it together? So about 4 years ago, I put together a draft of the book, and then it's really only earlier this year that I took the time to go ahead and finish writing it.
Okay, and it is a self-published work, isn't it, Michael?
It is, yes. It's self-published. I decided not to go the publisher route, mainly because of my experiences. I've actually written six other books, mainly on business. And my experience with the first one, which was published by the American Society for Quality, was that firstly, the editing process took about a year and a half, which was far too long. And then secondly, it turned out that my actual commission on the book was about 3%. So the publisher made off with 97%. And I thought, well, I'm not letting that happen again.
So smart move. So in that case. Now, the bulk of the stories, as you say, are set mainly in the 1970s in this book. They're woolen jerseys, cycling shoes that were designed for Tour de France riders rather than Tour of Ireland riders. And Michael, it was a different time as far as cycling was concerned, wasn't it?
Very different. Certainly, you know, it's unrecognisable from today, Jordan. You know, it's much more scientific today. Back in those days, we were a group of riders who would just have no idea about, you know, the science of cycling and of even things like as basic as stretching and diet and so forth. We just got on our bikes and rode as far as we could for as long as we could.
Mm-hmm. And like, you need a lot of bottle to race on a bike. That's what I got from the book anyway. And Dennis Brennan is one of the characters who certainly springs to mind. You discuss his terrible injuries in the book, Michael.
Yeah, Dennis is a remarkable individual. He was one of Ireland's top cyclists in the early 70s. He was on the Irish Olympic squad for Munich. And not long before the Munich Games, he was involved in an accident where the bunch was actually hit by a car. And Dennis took the brunt of the impact from the car, which almost severed his leg. It took years of rehabilitation before Dennis was able to race again. And the fact that he did come back and race is a story in itself. But, you know, certainly he overcame huge adversity. He went through so many operations with skin grafts, trying to keep the leg together, more or less. And finally, he was able to build it up in the mid-70s. I remember we went and did a week-long tour around the west of Ireland, which was Dennis's first real test back on the bike. And I think the following year was when he started racing again.
Oh, amazing, yeah. What a comeback that certainly was. Now, we'll talk about your own injuries a little later on, Michael, but I want to move on to, the Cork interest in this book, because that's where we're based here in Youghal in County Cork, because you would have ridden with the Cork team at the 1975 Tour of Ireland.
That's right. It was such a privilege to be put on a team with riders like Dennis McCarthy and Gerry Geary. You know, men who were really the core of the sport in Ireland outside of Dublin. These were the type of people that were an inspiration to me as a young rider in my first tour of Ireland. You know, for instance, Dennis McCarthy was really the heart and soul of the team. He was always optimistic, no matter what happened during the day, whether there'd been terrible weather or a really, really hard stage. Dennis never lost his sense of humor. He always boosted us, our morale at the end of the day. Just talking to him made you feel as if, you know, this sport is really hard, but it's also, it can be fun too. And, you know, no matter how much suffering you go through, at the end of the day, you know, there's always someone who puts a positive spin on it. And Dennis was one of those characters. And then you had people like Gerry Geary, who were really, really solid riders who would always be there to support the team. And although Donald Crowley wasn't on our team, and John Hegarty was another man from Fermoy, those two men were also really good, solid riders who we would rely on in times of adversity, when you got a puncture or anything like that. They would be there to help. And, you know, it was men like that that made up a real team.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And Dennis and Gerry both hail from the Youghal area, and they certainly live and breathe cycling. Let's talk about your own injuries, Michael. I know building up to 1978, which was in many ways your best year on the bike, you had to overcome a lot of setbacks before that.
Yeah, that's true, Jordan. You know, the crashes, which were so frequent in the bunches. I mean, cycling is obviously, it can be a dangerous sport, especially at high speed. I was fortunate in that my crashes typically didn't occur during races, but more or less around the races. The worst one was a crash I had in 1976 when I was in the Wicklow Mountains. We had just finished the race and were riding back home, and we encountered a very steep downhill that led to Newtown Mount Kennedy down on the Coast Road. And I wasn't familiar with it. And for some reason, myself and one of the other lads, we started racing down the hill. I totally overshot a corner and went straight into a stone wall and damaged my knee considerably. That affected me for the next year and a half. But in 78, with a course of rehabilitation and a lot of help from a Dr. Ivers in Dublin, I was able to rebuild the quadricep muscle around the knee and start racing properly again.
And you certainly found form after that, because you had multiple victories in 1978. And I guess you kind of put down your form to the experience you picked up on the continent, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was really a turning point for me. The reason that I was sent to, I'd had a few experiences in continental races as a junior rider in Ireland, which would be anyone under the age of 19. I was sent away to a few races. But my first really big race internationally was in 78. I won the Longford two-day race in Ireland, and then I was chosen for a race called the Tour of Europe. And that was a six-day stage race in France and on the borders of Luxembourg and Germany that went through the Vosges Mountains. And at the time, when I was chosen on the team, I remember my team manager saying to me, "I wouldn't go if I were you, you'll get hammered." And I thought, well, you know what? I'm going to go. I'm not going to turn down this opportunity. And it was actually the best thing I ever did, because even though it was eye-opening for me to race against some guys who were top-class Olympic riders, also being around the Irish team, people who had just finished the Tour of Britain, which is one of the hardest stage races in Europe, people like Oliver McQuaid and John Short and Tony Lally, these guys really helped me through that race. And as the race went on, I found myself actually getting stronger and feeling better and better about my own confidence, so that when I came back to Ireland, I felt as though I was in a totally different zone, that I was actually capable of winning any race.
And speaking of which, I mean, one of the most memorable chapters in your book, Behind the Yellow Jersey, for me was your final tour of Ireland in 1978. That was an epic, really. And the chapter, it was like a scene from Braveheart, wasn't it?
Well, yes, it was quite a race. We were actually, that race, I was chosen on the Irish team along with Bernard McCormick and Stephen Roach and Anthony Ellard and Eugene Smith. So Stephen Roach at the time was emerging as a top rider, and our job really was to support Stephen as he tried to win the yellow jersey from John Short, who was riding for a very powerful British Airways team.
Yes.
And so every day we would ride in support of Stephen, but it was the conditions were fairly tough that year. It rained virtually every day, and we had no way of drying our clothes. We were often staying in hotels that had no heating. We would, you know, sort of dismally put our racing shoes up against radiators that didn't work and hope that they would dry out a little bit overnight. It was fairly rough. And, you know, for me, I think a source of inspiration was my roommate for the whole week was Stephen Roach.
Yes.
And Stephen was never in any way daunted by what lay ahead. He always felt as though he was capable of winning the entire race, and his recovery was just incredible. I would come in shattered after a 100-mile stage, and Stephen would be capable of recovering overnight, where his heart rate would go down into the high 40s, whereas mine would stick up around 72 beats a minute, showing that I hadn't really recovered, whereas, you know, he would be fully recovered. So it was an inspiration, too, to be with somebody like that.
I understand. And the Gap of Monmore in Donegal is one particular stage that stands out at that Tour of Ireland in 1978. I mean, that sounds like a grueling climb. Do you think most of the, we'll say, recent Tour de France winners would struggle to get up that?
Well, I think Monmore is a test for any cyclist. It goes as steep as a 1 in 4 gradient in places, or 25%. So literally you're standing on the pedals to get around some of the corners. Now, in those days, our gearing was very different than it is today. We didn't ever think of using the ultra low gears that would be used in racing today. So it wasn't unusual for the lowest gear we would have to be 54 inches, for instance, which meant that every turn of the pedals you would move 4 feet, 6 inches. Whereas today, the lowest gears, probably the riders would only move about 3 feet every turn of the pedal. So it's a lot easier to get the pedals round. But those were gears that would have been unheard of back in the 70s.
I see. And I know you had a podium finish on the final stage in your hometown of Dublin that year, but earlier on in the week, you probably had a chance of winning a stage. And was that frustrating, the way you had to wait for Roach in that stage?
Yes. I thought that my fortunes in the race had turned. We were on a stage into Ballina. It was about a 100-mile stage, and I got away in a break of about 11 riders, and I felt very good and very confident that we were going to stay clear, because we had a 3-minute lead on the main group, which had Stephen and the yellow jersey of John Short and other top riders in it. But 3 minutes is a significant gap, and with only 30 or so miles to go, I thought, yeah, we'll be sprinting for the win here. What happened was that John Short, the yellow jersey, crashed back in the bunch, and there was an immediate reaction, which included kind of a controversial move on the part of Stephen, because when John crashed, Stephen attacked. And the 3 minutes lead that we had, which would normally not be closed by a group for many miles, was closed down in less than 10 miles. That shows you the speed that they were doing. They were probably doing over 50 kilometers an hour coming up behind us. And my team manager came up to me in the car, and he said, "Stop working. Wait for Stephen. He's coming up. Short's crashed." And sure enough, Stephen came up with Bernie McCormick, who is one of our other Irish teammates, and just tapped me on the shoulder and said, "Come on, Mick, up the front." And we went up, and we worked so hard at the front. It was absolutely, you know, as hard as we could go. And then about 10 miles from the finish, my jersey was grabbed from behind, and I was literally almost thrown off the bike. It was John Short wearing the yellow jersey, and he was so angry, because he and Robert Miller, who became a top professional, and the other rest of the British Airways team, including Dennis McCarthy, had to really chase very, very hard for all those miles to catch up with us. And he was so angry, he was almost fit to throw me into a ditch. He said, "I thought you were my friend, and I see you're working against me." I won't repeat what I said to him.
But fair enough. But what a memorable Tour of Ireland that was, and it's 40 years ago now. I guess you touched on, you were really impressed by Roach's rate of recovery, and I know in the book as well you mentioned how tough Kelly was as a rider. I guess the big question is, back in the 70s, like, did you know that you were in the presence of something special when riding alongside Kelly and Roach?
Yes. I don't think any of us were in any doubt. I mean, Sean Kelly was a phenomenal rider from a very young age. He turned senior when he was only 16, whereas most people wait until they're 19 to join the senior riders. He had already won the National Junior Championship. I was in awe of Sean Kelly when I started riding the bike competitively. I knew that he had already gone to the World Championships with a close friend of mine, Terry Ferris, and had impressed there. I knew that John Lackey, who was probably one of the most influential men in Irish cycling back in the day, had given Kelly a bike because the bike that Sean was riding was way too small for him. Even though he was riding it internationally, he was banging his knees off the crossbar so much that the paint had come off the crossbar of his bike. So John decided to give him a proper racing bike, and heaven help us when he did that. But he was legendary even when I was racing. He was going up mountains in gears that none of us could fathom how he could get up the mountain. He was so strong. And Stephen was, you only had to look at him to know that he was something special. I mean, the way he rode the bike, it was like poetry in motion. He was totally motionless in his upper body, but his legs would spin these gears that most of us would struggle to get around. He was just what we call a pedaleur de charme, a very elegant rider that put him in a different class. And he knew it himself. Even to talk to Stephen, you could tell that he had the confidence to become a top-class rider.
And he certainly did. Kelly became the king of the classics, and Roach went on to complete that historic Tour de France Giro World's Treble in 87. And they both, of course, won dozens of other races, as we know. Michael, there was a drug culture in Europe at the time, as we know, and the years that followed as well. What was the attitude towards doping on the Irish roads back in the 70s?
Well, it was really unheard of, to be quite honest. In my book, I can say with definition that I never saw any form of drug taking of any sort. We knew that, for instance, my idol back in those days was an English rider called Tommy Simpson. But Tommy had died during the Tour de France in 1967 when he took an overdose of amphetamines. And also mixed that with alcohol that he had taken to try and settle his stomach because he had a serious stomach complaint. He was trying to win the Tour de France. So we were aware that the pros were taking stuff. In fact, I think that one of the reasons that Peter Doyle, who was, you know, certainly in a class along with Stephen Roach and Sean Kelly, but an earlier era, never turned professional was because of the doping culture. That he didn't want to be a part of that. He had ridden as an amateur in France, and he had seen what was happening, and I think that may have been the reason he never turned pro.
Okay.
But for the Irish riders, unheard of, on the domestic roads. When I rode the Tour of Europe, interestingly enough, the one day that I did really well, which was the last day of the race, I finished in the leading break. A member of the Aussie team came up to me, the Australian team, and he said, so you've been dipping into the medicine chest. and I just looked at him, and I was just like, what are you saying? You know, I just couldn't imagine, but he was convinced that, you know, how could this guy get in the break if he's not taking something? So obviously, you know, riders were taking stuff, but I never saw it. I did hear stories from other Irish riders who'd gone abroad to the Tour of Denmark, which was dominated by riders from the Eastern Bloc, that syringes had been seen. But honestly, I would say it hadn't infiltrated the sport at home at all.
Okay. I love the quote in the book, a pack of 100, around 100 hardcore riders who showed up week after week to ride on the rough roads of Ireland, is how you define that period. So it was so much more than just competing for trophies, wasn't it?
It absolutely was. I mean, we were, not a large group. We were not disparate. We didn't come from, you know, for instance, a triathlon background, which would be totally different. You get a lot of triathletes in the bunches today. I think it's quite a different atmosphere than it was back then. We were more like a family. I would say, you know, and the fact that two incredible riders emerged from it is really remarkable, especially for a very small community, a racing community that Ireland had at the time. So, you know, to show up, there was a great deal of camaraderie in the bunch. Everybody looked out for each other. And at the end of the day, it wasn't uncommon for riders to get together, even, you know, go for a pint of shandy or something and just chat about the race. And you know, it wasn't that we were all deadly serious, even though the racing was hard. There was a lot of levity involved too.
Mm-hmm. I understand. You've seen a lot of the world through riding a bike, a lot of Ireland, a lot of the world. Are you still cycling nowadays?
I am. I was able to continue my cycling, and one of the groups I would go out with is in North Dublin. I go out with a guy who was really another inspiration to me, Peter Morton. He's still riding the bike. Bernie McCormack, Oliver McQuaid. Those are the three riders that I got away with in the last stage of the Tour of Ireland in 78. They were all good friends of mine. And ironically, or interestingly, 40 years later, you know, we're still riding together. We went to Kerry last year and had a great time away. And it's great that these guys are still riding today. I'm still racing. I do the adventure races. I'm going to do the Sea to Summit here in Westport in November.
Brilliant.
So I'm mixing the cycling with a bit of running.
Oh, excellent. It's a bug that never goes away, I guess.
No, I think it gets into your blood somehow. You know, even though I was away from it for the better part of, you know, 20 years, it never leaves you, and you still remember those days vividly, obviously.
Michael, thank you so much for sharing your stories with us today. Really enjoyed the chat. And listen, congratulations on the book. It's called Behind the Yellow Jersey, Racing in the Shadows of Kelly and Roche. It's by Michael Cusack. And more information is available online. You can read a synopsis of the book and find out more information on Michael's career at amazon.com. Michael, thanks a million, and do take care.
Thanks so much, Jordan.